Radio Today programme with Audioboom.
Welcome to Germany, where it's cold, very cold. I'm walking across the Alexanderplatz, the centre of East Berlin, to go and meet some of the movers and shakers at Radio Days Europe 2013.
The Radio Today programme.
So here we are in the parochial Kirche in Berlin. Rolf Brandred is with me. He's one of the co-organisers of Radio Days Europe 2013. You must be very proud of not just this location, but the number of people here, Rolf.
Yes, 1,200 people is fantastic.
Now, this is kind of two or three times as many as you used to get for the first ones.
Right. We started with 400, then 600, then 800, and then we take a big jump till 1,200. And I think that's a major thing with this conference. You know, making a good program is one thing. Letting people meet each other is another thing. And radio people, they love to talk.
So what makes Radio Days Europe so successful from your point of view? I mean, where are people coming from to talk to each other?
Well, they're coming from all over Europe. And I think Antarctica is the only continent we don't have anyone from. This time, we have three-doubled the number of Germans. We have a big Russian contingent. And really, all countries have, you know, raised their ciphers. Why do they come? Well, very many come back from year to year, which means that they had a good experience. Second, I think it is a truly European conference. Most radio things are very national. We have, you know, brought the best from different countries. So I think they get a lot in the breadth of this.
We're going to meet some of the speakers and some of the delegates over the next couple of days. But just briefly, what are you most looking forward to?
I'm really looking forward to hear Robert Krulich, Radiolab. He is, you can say that is a discovery program. That's the fascination over discovering new things.
He's this year's Ira Glass, isn't he?
He's this year's Ira Glass. He's the trend maker in American public radio. And that is going to be exciting. Then, I really like Ben Cooper. I visited him this fall, and when I listen to him, I'm pretty sure that, well, he's going to have a career going, not ending as controller of Radio 1. You know, reaching the young, modernizing public service, it sounds like he has very interesting things to say about that.
Well, those are just two of the people we'll meet over the next couple of days. Rolf, good luck with Radio Days Europe 2013.
Thank you.
The Radio Today programme.
I thought we should talk to one of the exhibitors. There are a lot of stands here at Radio Days Europe 2013. I found Dan McQuillan, who's talking about phone box and all the other beautiful things that Broadcast Bionic to do. How's business?
Yeah, very good. I mean, because media is changing for us, we need to be in the sort of creative space talking to producers and presenters. We come from an engineering background. We know the technical people who help build studios. But the future for us is in the social media space. It's in talking about how radio is created, how you guys can make compelling content, and the difference that engineers can make creatively. So this is a great space for us to listen. I'm not speaking at this conference, but I learn more when I listen than when I speak. So I'm going around listening to, you know, what the creative end of the industry is doing, and then talking back when people come out between the sessions, come onto the stand, and people are interested in finding out, okay, how can we actually use this new technology in the studio to help make just better radio, really.
Are you meeting people from a lot of different countries?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I don't think I've met two people from any the same country back to back. So from Slovenia to Russia to Holland to quite a few guys, I guess, from Germany at being local. No, we've made lots of new contacts and new friends, and you know, we've only been here a couple of hours, and it's been well worth it.
And it does seem to me that compared with some other radio conferences that we might have been at, people are paying more attention to the stands. There's a lot of business going on.
Yes, and I mean, I think the industry in general actually is finding its confidence now. So it may be this conference, or it may just be the kind of moment that we're in. But I think radio's found its mojo a little bit. Partly it's all this new media stuff, and we think, hey, we have a role to play in that, and radio's got a little bit of confidence. Not arrogance or hubris yet, but it's finding some confidence. And so, yeah, we're hearing people talking about interesting things in the session, and then coming out here and saying, okay, how can we get this done? How can we do some multi-platform stuff? How can we do some social media stuff? And yeah, I think the radio is... you know, it feels happier than it did two or three years ago anyway.
Thank you, Dan.
The Radio Today programme.
Well, people are here from all over the world, not least the United States of America. Dame Blair, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? Good to see you.
Very good to see you. How does this compare with the old NAB Europe event that it's pretty much supplanted now?
Well, you know, I think it's good that somebody's supplanted it and that there is an event, and it gives us a chance to get together and see each other after, you know, maybe some years of not seeing each other. But for us, just to have FaceTime with our clients all in one place is really convenient. Instead of me having to come over and do a whole tour of Germany and Austria and then maybe have to pop over to, you know, France or the UK, I can just come here now and in a couple of days hopefully see everybody I need to see and maybe meet a few new people and maybe attend one or two interesting seminars.
Your business is selling jingles, imaging to radio stations, so you're probably in a good place to assess the health, the business health of this industry, because we've had a few years of being told that, you know, we're all going to hell in a handcart, and now I'm sensing people are a little bit more optimistic today.
Well, I think, you know, that everybody's saying those things with their fingers crossed, maybe, and a little bit of a wing and a prayer. But yeah, I mean, in the U.S., they keep talking about how things are getting better, and hopefully they are. You know, we want the world economy to go back to normal and media and radio to get back to normal. I think it just, if you can still deliver listeners, if you can still deliver, you know, a good CPI, then, you know, then advertisers are going to continue to come to the table.
They keep writing radio off, don't they? But even in America,
it's still flourishing.
It's still
there. It's still there. You know, even though there was an ugly rumor going around that the car manufacturers, General Motors, you may have heard this and all, were going to stop installing broadcast radios in their cars and only install Sirius and Spotify and Pandora and all. But then we heard last night that that actually maybe not be the case, that GM's rethinking their position, and now we think that we probably should continue to install at least FM radios, you know. It's always interesting in this business.
The Radio Today program.
One of the most powerful presentations at Radio Days Europe 13 was just given by Susan Margetti from the CBC. This is the public broadcaster in Canada. And you were talking about turning your all-speech morning show into a show that genuinely reflected and connected with all the diversity of the city of Toronto. And I'm sure there'll be people listening to this who run public stations, not least the BBC, thinking, well, that must have put the audience down. Now, it did, didn't it, to start with? But then what happened?
Well, that's right. When we launched our program changes, we did take a little hit in the ratings. But 1 year later, we would go back up, and not only back up, to our highest level at that time ever in our history, growing both the 35 to 49 plus, the 50 plus, and 65 plus. So, in other words, we not only got our core back, but we also managed to grow our core, which is very hard to do.
And you've gone from sixth to first.
Sixth to number one, and not just number one once, number one 50 times as of 2 weeks ago.
Now, how did you deal with, and I'm sure you had them, the old middle-aged white staff who you took over, who said, Susan, we don't need to do all this. What's the point?
You know, I think that when we reached a critical mass, when we began to have real opportunities, and we didn't push anyone out the door, but when opportunities came up, we chose to hire strategically. And as more and more of the team became diverse, those issues faded increasingly into the background. And that's why it's so important not to have one diverse person or two diverse people, but to actually create a team that proportionally represents the makeup of your community.
What was that line that you put up right at the beginning of your presentation that your then boss had said was the important thing?
Oh, I invited our vice president. I had a mandate for change when I started at CBC Toronto as the new manager, and I was going to make changes, and I knew that people were antsy about me coming in to make changes. And I invited the vice president of the day in to say a few words, you know, give me some credibility and let everyone know that I had this mandate. And he opened with talking about diversity and community reflection, and he said, if we don't get this right, we'll be a precious emblem to a dying elite. And it gave me chills. He was a bit poetic. He's since retired, but a brilliant man. And it stuck with me, and it's kind of been my mantra all these years later of, you know, it's absolutely critical to be more meaningful to more people. And the way you do that is you begin to make inroads into those communities and make sure that people can see and hear their stories and their voices, especially on the public broadcaster
airwaves. And just quickly, this has got to be more valuable, more important than just saying, well, we'll do an Asian show once a week, we'll do an Italian show once a week, we'll do a Chinese show once a week.
You know what? When I made changes in smaller centers, when I left, it went right back to the way it was. And the thing that I'm most proud of with Toronto is I have a team. It doesn't matter. If I don't come back from radio days in Europe, they will carry on, you know? And that's the difference between creating a fundamental team that buys into the mission, that gets it. They don't just get it. They live it. They are it. And they will carry on. And you're right. It's embedded into the very fabric of our offering to the Toronto public. It isn't a one-off show over here or now a special series, never to be heard from again. It is an every single day, every single show, we ask ourselves what is happening in the broader community and how we can reflect that on our airwaves.
The Radio Today program.
Oh, look, if it isn't Roy Martin, the editor of Radio Today, England's, Britain's premier radio news centre.
Indeed, Radio Today UK and Ireland now,
and
actually,
Ireland.
Yes.
What do you think of Radio Days Europe, Roy?
Yeah, I'm impressed, actually. I wasn't, I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting probably something not as grand and not as exciting as this, but I'm genuinely excited by events so far of day one.
If you were describing it to somebody who hadn't been but knew the UK Radio Festival, what would you say the differences are?
It's very German.
The food is certainly different.
It is. It's very German, but it's good.
It seems to me one of the exciting things about this as a conference is that people are genuinely debating issues. It's not bland, is it? You know, there are some exciting things people want to talk about, and there's not a lot of showing off, but there is a lot of engaging.
Yes, there's some selling. Inrix and people like that were selling their products, which is fine because they've got new exciting products to shout about. So they spend 5 minutes at the end of the session saying, look, we've got a new app that does loads of really clever thing, which I think is welcomed, and most of it is about learning. So yeah, it's a good mix.
Well done. Well, I'll catch you tomorrow.
All right.
The Radio Today programme.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
Well, we promised you Ben Cooper, and here he is. That's a good speech you do.
Thank you very much indeed.
Well practiced. So, delivering young people, you've managed to get the audience for Radio 1 down by a year, but you suggested on the stage that you'd prefer a different metric to be used. What is it?
I think it's a combination of different metrics. I think if you've got a radio station which is going to have a strategy of listen, watch and share, then obviously Radar is still fundamentally important to that listening part of what you do, and that is the train that pulls the carriages. But I think there are metrics to be worked out around watching and how important that watching is, and also the sharing, that time spent with your brand on those different platforms. So at the moment, I haven't got an answer, but we're trying to work it out. We've tried various different cuts of it, but hopefully we'll get somewhere where it will be able to say, right, this is a good judgment on whether or not you are succeeding on different platforms when it comes to watching and to sharing.
We're used to seeing graphs, aren't we, of radio audiences among the 15 to 24-year-olds just gradually declining. Is that going to go on forever?
No, I think as long as you know what you exist for, why you exist, what is your purpose, how are you enriching your listeners' lives, and as long as you keep those sort of core principles as the filter for everything you do, then I think you will be continue to be relevant to young audiences. So I think, yes, we have a problem with platforms and delivery of our content. You know, if you think about it, we've had a luxury in the radio industry since, you know, the sort of early 1900s. We have delivered our content through a radio. well, now times are changing, and you know, we deliver our content through a radio, but also through the internet or through a TV and mobile phone. At the moment, you've got a dual economy, or if not several economies, that you are having to juggle and judge. And I think there'll be a series of years where you expand in what you do, and then you contract what you do as you focus on where your wins are.
Just one more thing before you get mobbed by all these other people who want to speak to you. John Simons from Real and Smooth was on stage this morning talking about the future being all brands. And of course, Radio 1 has had a luxury of not having a national competitor all its life. Now it's got almost national capital and almost national kiss, and maybe one day they might even amalgamate. Is that going to change the structure of radio in UK and change the nature of your job?
I think it has already changed. You only need to go back a few years when, you know, YouTube came on board, Twitter came on board, got things like Spotify, you hear rumours about sort of iRadio. All of these things take up young audiences' time. They take up their eyeballs, they take up their ears, and all of those are competitors to you. So I think the market has changed completely in the last few years. Having those radio brands that will feel more national, I think just adds to that competition.
The Radio Today programme.
Well, we promised you Robert Krulwich from Radio Lab, and we finally found him. You were mobbed at the end of your talk.
It was a little bit crowded, yeah.
I think that's a sign of just how popular the program, the podcast you make is. Just give us an idea of some of the extraordinary statistics.
You're right. It was not anything we thought or even needed to be successful. It was mostly just me and this other fellow playing around. But it now is on 400 radio stations in America. It has about 4 million radio listeners, give or take, and another 4 million on the podcast, actually 4.5. So they're kind of even.
Now, the exhilarating thing about what you do, I think, is you break all the rules. I cannot think of a program director I've ever met who would have accepted your idea for a program. You know, you don't have an eye-catching beginning to your program. You don't very often have a narrative. It sometimes doesn't make any sense at all. It's a tapestry of weird noises and music and sensible people talking, and sometimes looped and sometimes cut up. It's impossible to describe, and yet it's utterly, utterly compelling.
Yes, so I think if I were saying the sentence you just said, I would say that it actually does have all the things you don't think it has, but they're a little bit less obvious. But I think our job, after all, is to sort of jump into subjects that not everybody would want to spend an hour on and keep you there. When it began, it got an almost instant audience of 22-year-olds, roughly in the mean. That was the mean, which is very, very low, which has meant there were as many high school kids listening as there were post-college kids. And one time in Chicago, I remember walking onto a stage, and I asked, was anyone here born before 1965, just out of curiosity? It was a total silence. I said, how about 66? How about 67? At 1971, there was a solitary clap from somewhere high up in the second balcony. I said, well, what brought you here tonight? He says, I have no idea. It's my daughter's having her 21st birthday, and this is her birthday present. I don't know who the heck you are. And I said, ah. There is a learning curve about this vocabulary, for sure. But this is the weird thing. It seems to skew almost crazily towards the younger ones. That is, all of the things you just described have a crazy logic to them, which, frankly, as one of the presenters, took me a while to understand myself.
But now here's the thing. We're told, aren't we, that young people have no attention span, mm-hmm. that they're easily distracted, that they don't really like the radio very much because there's nothing to look at. Mm-hmm. And yet here you are doing something that is inherently a radio show, and yet it is speaking to that generation.
I don't know why. I mean, partly we make it very, very, very voluptuous. But this is what we would call the bijou business. This is like a jeweler's business. So we only make 10 a year. On the podcast, we make another 11 or 12, so that's 22 a year. But for the radio, just 10. And why do people choose it, in spite of all the things you said? I don't know. I think partly if you put buds in your ear, if you're listening to it not on the radio but in the podcast, there's a lot to hear. The production is very knowing, but it takes a little while to get used to. This is a show which knows that it's a show, And it knows that its audience knows that it's a show. So if someone's earphones fall off, we jump at the chance of letting the audience hear that. Now, it sounds, as you put it, unprofessional, but in our topsy-turvy version of what's going on, we are sharing with our audience the knowledge that this is pretense and that we're manufacturing it. It's meant to sound like a beautiful flow, but it isn't. So there's occasional trips behind the curtain.
Robert, I could talk to you forever, but I'm going to have to let you go. Okay. I hope you can come to the UK.
The Radio Today programme.
Well, no radio conference is complete without James Cridland, radio futurologist. What do you think of this one?
I think it's been really good, actually. Radio Days Europe kind of grows and grows, and it's been interesting how many people have been here today saying, you know, this is really good, and actually we need more of these, you know, new ideas from across Europe at the radio festival. And I think that's probably a fair thing to end up saying. There have been some fantastic speakers. I've just been watching Craig Bruce, who's the content director of Southern Cross Austereo, Clive Dickens' new gaff, and you know, he was inspiring talking about how they sort out new talent for the radio, how they bring new talent up, and what they do in order for each individual show to really shine. Some really, really interesting ideas in there. So that was really good.
You were talking this morning about smartphones and the amount of listening to radio that is done on them. My impression was that you were saying, let's not get carried away with this stuff. Let's remember that the bulk of listening is still through conventional radio sets.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing about smartphones is that we all have mobile apps, don't we, now, and all of that, but actually the amount of listening that happens on them is quite low. And there are lots of people talking about the future of radio will be on a smartphone. And I think I'm just sort of going caution, caution. In Europe, the future of radio is a multi-platform future. And sure, smartphones play their part, but they're currently really not very big.
Can you tell me something about the Eurochip, this initiative that's come from the EBU? How important is that going to be?
Well, so what the Eurochip is, it's got a brilliant name because it's not a chip and it's not actually just for Europe. So I'm not quite sure how they named that. But let's ignore that for a minute and actually have a look at what it actually is, which is it's an initiative to get broadcast radio, so FM and DAB Plus essentially, into mobile phones. And that's really important to get broadcast radio into mobile phones because it's really cheap to listen to. It's really cheap for broadcasters to broadcast on if you've got a big stick already. It's great for battery life and so on and so forth. And actually, some of the figures that I was showing show that actually consumers really want to just tune into their FM or DAB Plus radio stations on their phone.
So is that remarkable stat from India?
Well, yes, indeed. I was looking at the amount of FM listening that happens on mobile phones. And in India, 94% of all radio listeners listen on their mobile phone. That's an amazing figure, all through FM, by the way, on their mobile phone. And I thought, well, that's an amazing figure. And then looked a little bit closer. Only 16%, 1/6, not 60, 16% of all radio listening actually happens on a radio. Doesn't that show you what a different place India is?
James, thank you.
The Radio Today programme.
It's always good to hear from the people who pay the bills. I've got a man from Pilot Agency, Damien Rodgett, here, who's just spoken very articulately about how we in the radio business are not very good at giving you the right creative.
I wouldn't say it was about not giving you the right creative. I think it's all about time and place and seeing it within the context of a more global approach to advertising. And the advertising business has become very fragmented over the last few years. So I think we need to think about putting radio within the context of our more complicated, fragmented world of social media, of internet, of continuous partial attention.
Because we're still thinking of ourselves as radio, a discrete medium, and you're saying play a full part in a multimedia, multi-platform experience.
Absolutely. I think it's about appreciating that most listeners are not just listening, they're doing something else. And sometimes they're not just doing one other thing, they're doing two or three other things at the same time. And that depends on your target group, about, you know, how old people are and what they're doing and where they're going at a particular time in place. Maybe they're sitting in their car, but we all know what happens when you're sitting in your car. You're looking at your mobile, you go to the office, you're on the internet. I think you have to appreciate that most listeners are not just listening anymore.
Somebody made the point that
a lot of agencies are divided into the mediums that they look after. So you have the TV guys, the press guys, the online guys, the audio guys. Is that, do you think, why online audio has not attracted the sponsorship and advertising that it might have done? You know, there are very successful podcasts and very few advertisers chasing them.
Well, there's always going to be the issue of reach, about numbers, about how many people are actually physically listening to a program, and that will always be an issue with podcasts. The figures speak for themselves, and advertisers run after eyeballs or run after ears. The more ears, the more eyeballs you have, the more interesting it will be. I think if the currency is reach, then podcasts are going to have it quite difficult. If you put podcasts into a much more interesting media mix of doing a podcast, doing a web page, doing something on Facebook, doing something on YouTube, putting it in the context of those other mediums, then it becomes interesting to advertisers again.
Thanks very much indeed.
The Radio Today programme.
Well, here's a surprise. We're in the main room at the Congress Halle in Berlin, or whatever it's called, and guess who's on the stage? It's Paul Robinson doing the presenting. How did you get this job?
Hi, Trevor. I tell you, they just asked me, and you know what? I'm at a stage in my life where if someone asks me, I normally say yes.
Well, you're doing a very good job of it, I must say. It's good that they found time to mix sessions about advertising, sessions about technology, sessions about content. There's been a very wide-ranging brief.
Yeah, I think that's been really good. I think it's brought everybody in. But I think also it hasn't been in pockets or silos either. I think when people are talking about commercial issues, they're thinking about social media and how to monetize that, thinking about how social media interacts with programming as not only a source of editorial, but also promoting editorial. So I think it's all been pretty joined up, as well as being very comprehensive.
Favourite session?
Favourite session, Radiolab, because it was just so off the wall. I'm still singing those words that became music. I just think the idea that you do something unusual or risky, which is going to scare your boss, that actually suddenly results in 4.5 million podcasts, is what radio is all about.
Thank you, Paul.
The Radio Today programme.
It's always nice to hear some optimism on the stage. Denis Florent was speaking up for radio in a session about Spotify and other streaming services. Should we be worried about them at all?
It depends which ones, I think. Spotify is a very special case because they have this API which allows you to jump in, to develop apps, and to be yourself inside of Spotify. Deezer, on the other hand, is doing the opposite. You can't go in. They bring themselves inside of your service, which is very different, and I wouldn't say it's very interesting for radio stations, obviously. Pandora is a radio, the way we don't like it, but it's a radio. So Spotify is a very special case, and that's why I advocate a lot to work with them.
What you were saying, though, we should be worried about is brands coming in and stealing our breakfast.
Yes, of course. And I think that the problem is recommendation. Who's recommending kids which music to listen to? What's important? What's good? And so on. And if we don't do it, nature hating vacuum, hating emptiness, some other people will do it. And as I showed in the presentation, Coca-Cola already has radio stations online, but still, in South and Central America.
Do you think we, as radio stations, pay enough attention to transforming ourselves into a proper multimedia brand? Or do we still think of the web as something that we sort of rather grudgingly do on the side, rather as we used to print bumper stickers?
Fortunately, I think there's not one answer. It depends on which radio groups we're talking about. There are very, very different answers to this, very different response from groups. Some groups have already a huge online department that is at the same level as a radio or as the TV department of the group, and that's probably the smartest way to do it. The thing that I see radios didn't understand yet is that we lost the privilege of ubiquity. We were the only one everywhere with them. We were the only one in the pocket. We were the only one with two batteries and you know, it was easy. We were the only one. It's not true anymore. So do we want to be there? And it's simple. We just have to be there. We have to have apps. We have to be there. I hear radio stations telling me, yes, Dennis, but apps, this is now. What's going to happen in 2 years? Well, if you think like that, it means you're still thinking 20th century, where a pope would last 27 years. Now they last 8 years and they resign. So industry is the same. It goes very quick, very fast. And if you're not able to develop an app for the next year, and that's all, and probably change it for the year to come, then don't do radio.
The Radio Today programme.
Well, we met Rolf, one of the co-organisers at the very beginning of this podcast. So let's complete it by talking to Anders from Sweden. You must be very proud of another successful Radio Days Europe.
Well, yes, I'm very pleased. It went really well and people are really happy and that's great.
And you've triumphed through the snowstorm.
Well, people are suggesting that we should choose a warmer place for next year, but I think they will be disappointed in that process.
Well, Dublin. Let's talk about why Dublin then for next time.
Why not go to the English-speaking world or part of Europe, actually, this time? And because we've been to the south, we've been to the north, we've been to the German central part, so we either could go back south, east, or west. So why not go west? And I think it will be really great. Our broadcasting friends in Ireland, both south and north of the border, are welcoming us, and I'm sure they will make it a really good experience. And we have a great venue by the Liffey, a very new venue. It's just beautiful. So I think that will be great, really great, and especially for, you know, also close for people from the UK to come as well. So
I think I should say that actually I'm quite disappointed, and one or two other UK delegates here have said to me they're a bit disappointed by the number of people from the UK have come. When you look at how many Russians have you got here?
I'm not sure exactly.
70?
Yeah, something, 70, yeah. 80 or something. It's grown from 20 last year. They brought their own translator. So, yeah, that's amazing.
Here you are. You do the whole conference for us in our language, but not enough of us come.
I don't know. Can you explain it?
No. Well, let's hope we're better represented next year. Anders, well done. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Radio Today programme. It's been a TDC production by Jamie Taylor. And we'll have next week an interview with Mark Ramsey, the American consultant, and also a chat with Clive Dickens, recently departed COO of Absolute Radio. See you then.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboom.